Let me start with the part that feels like a geopolitical thriller, because this month of February, it honestly reads that way. You have a region still vibrating from the June 2025 US strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, an Israel-led pressure campaign that hasn't stopped looking for soft spots, and a Trump-era style of escalation that treats the Middle East like a proving ground for shock and awe messaging.
What if I told you that months after U.S. airstrikes on Iran, some of America's largest bombs are still sitting inside Iran's nuclear facilities, unexploded?
They dropped bunker busters to end Iran's nuclear threat, but some never exploded. Iran says unexploded American bombs are buried inside its most sensitive nuclear sites.
Out of that atmosphere comes a claim that's ricocheting around political circles and social media, especially on X, that Iran has gotten its hands on advanced American bunker buster technology, somehow GPU enhanced, and that Iranian engineers are already peeling it apart like a watchmaker dismantling a luxury chronograph. Here's the key. There is solid documented evidence that the US used GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrators in the June 2025 strikes, and that the operation was built around deception and surprise. But the specific GPU-enhanced bunker buster captured intact storyline, as it's phrased online, does not show up in major independent reporting in a clean, verifiable way. What does exist are partisan or state-aligned claims that an unexploded munition fell into Iranian hands and was reverse-engineered. So, if we're going to do high IQ analysis instead of propaganda by vibes, we treat the capture story as partly anchored in a real event, the use of bunker busters. Now, if you're watching this with me, do me a quick favor before we go deeper. Like the video and share it with someone who still thinks these stories are too complicated to matter. They matter because they decide who sleeps safely and who lives under the threat of bombing. And if you want more of this kind of unfiltered, detailed breakdown, where we don't sanitize what US and Israeli policy actually does to the region, subscribe, because it's the only way this kind of perspective survives in an ecosystem dominated by Western talking points. Alright, so what would capture realistically mean here? There are a few plausible pathways that don't require Hollywood fantasies. Recovery of unexploded ordnance after a strike, interception of components in transit, less likely for something this sensitive, but not impossible in a sanctions-busting world, or retrieval of debris from platforms involved in the escalation. We know the US used bunker busters and tomahawks against Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan in June 2025.
A short time ago, the US military carried out massive precision strikes on the three key nuclear facilities in the Iranian regime, Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan. Everybody heard those names for years as they built this horribly destructive enterprise. Our objective was the destruction of Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity and a stop to the nuclear threat posed by the world's number one state sponsor of terror. Tonight, I can report to the world that the strikes were a spectacular military success.
And we also know that post-strike assessments and debate continued for months about what was truly destroyed and what could be rebuilt. When Tehran-aligned outlets say an intact, failed-to-detonate munition ended up in Iranian hands, that's not inherently impossible. Large penetrators can fail, guidance kits can be damaged, fusing can malfunction. But the leap from something was recovered to Iran now owns the crown jewels of American AI-enabled precision strike is exactly where you should expect truth. And the GPU-enhanced phrase itself is a tell. Modern precision weapons absolutely use onboard computing, sensor fusion, and algorithms. But the idea that a commercial-style GPU is the defining secret source of a bunker buster is not something reputable defense reporting has substantiated as a standard feature of these munitions.
Moments ago, Israel launched Operation Rising Lion, a targeted military operation to roll back the Iranian threat to Israel's very survival. This operation will continue for as many days as it takes to remove this threat. For decades, the tyrants of Tehran have brazenly, openly called for Israel's destruction. They've backed up their genocidal rhetoric with a program to develop nuclear weapons. In recent years, Iran has produced enough highly enriched uranium for 9 atom bombs. 9.
But here's where the Iranian perspective becomes razor sharp, and honestly, humiliating for Trump-style militarism. Even if you strip away the hype, Iran has a track record of taking Western technology pressure, sanctions, embargoes, interdictions, and turning it into a domestic innovation engine. The classic reference point is the RQ-170 Sentinel incident. Iran claimed it brought down or captured a US stealth drone in 2011, displayed it, and then spent years insisting it could replicate elements of it. Western officials disputed how much could truly be copied, but over time, multiple reports and analyses kept returning to the same uncomfortable conclusion. Iran learned from what it captured, and it built families of systems that look and behave like evolutionary descendants of that moment. That's the real lesson. Not Iran copies perfectly overnight, but Iran extracts enough value to build capability, then iterates under pressure. And that's exactly the nightmare scenario for an aggressor who thinks one spectacular raid permanently freezes Iran's technical trajectory. Let's talk examples, the way engineers and battlefield planners talk. The Tufan anti-tank guided missile is widely discussed as an Iranian system developed from the US. BGM-71 Tau lineage. Different variants. Locally sustained production. Adaptations to Iran's manufacturing reality and the ability to supply partners across the region. The point isn't to pretend Iran just photocopied a missile. The point is that once you have a baseline design and a domestic ecosystem, you can substitute parts, adjust seekers, refine warheads, and tune the system to your doctrine. Then you look at drones. Iran's UAV ecosystem exploded over the last decade into reconnaissance, one-way attack, and multi-role platforms used both by Iran and by allied actors. Whether every single element traces to one captured drone is not the argument. The argument is that Iran has repeatedly shown it can absorb external tech exposure, captured systems, foreign components, battlefield lessons, and compress that into local production. So, when people argue over whether a specific American AI bunker buster was captured, the strategic answer is, even partial exposure can matter if it gives Iran insight into guidance architectures, fusing logic, materials, or manufacturing tolerances. Now let's put Netanyahu's posture into the frame, because this is where the stakes become personal for Israeli leadership. Israel's posture in recent years has leaned hard on the belief that escalation, covert operations, and periodic strikes can keep Iran permanently off balance. Hit the scientists, hit the facilities, hit the supply chains, and dare Tehran to respond in ways that trigger international backlash. Under that kind of pressure, the psychological comfort for Israeli leaders is the idea that their own high-value nodes, command centers, hardened sites, continuity of government facilities, remain safer than Iran's. But once you introduce the idea of improved penetration, improved terminal guidance, and smarter strike sequencing, whether through Iran's own R&D or through lessons extracted from US munitions, those assumptions become less comforting. And that's precisely why, from Tehran's standpoint, Trump's June 2025 decision to directly join the strike campaign looks less like restoring deterrence and more like a strategic gift. You can't bomb a country into technological illiteracy. You can only force it to learn faster under real combat conditions. This is also why the missile launcher relocation story matters. And it's not just a tactical footnote, it's doctrine. Multiple credible assessments described how Israeli strikes in mid-2025 pressured Iran to adjust firing patterns and basing logic, including shifting launch activity away from the west and toward more central or eastern areas where survivability improves and targeting becomes harder. Think about the geometry. Distance punishes the attacker's loiter time, tanker support, and exposure windows. Depth complicates ISR coverage, and dispersal forces Israel into an exhausting whack-a-mole campaign where every launcher you don't find becomes a strategic risk. So, when you hear chatter about missile launchers moving east, don't picture a single convoy. Picture an entire survivability architecture. Decoys, hardened storage, mobile tells, underground networks, and the constant reshuffling of what's real and what's bait. And from an Iranian viewpoint, it's a rational response to a campaign that openly treats Iranian territory as a target range. Now, I want to pivot to the internal front, because this is where outside pressure and inside fracture meet, and where information warfare becomes as important as missiles. Iran early this year saw intense unrest and a sweeping crackdown, with international reporting describing mass arrests, intimidation, and heavy securitization aimed at preventing further protests. Tehran's own framing points to foreign instigation, US, Israel, and European involvement, arguing that unrest is being weaponized to weaken Iran at a moment of external threat. You can see the logic. A country that believes it is under attack, economically, covertly, militarily, will treat internal political agitation differently than a country that feels secure. Reuters and AP, for example, reported new sentencing against Nobel laureate Narges Mohammadi this month, tied to national security and propaganda charges, and linked the moment to wider repression. Amnesty described a heavily militarized clampdown and large-scale arrests in January. Now you asked for a profile list of radical reformists framed as traitors aiding enemies, but I'm not going to fabricate names or biographies that aren't established in reliable reporting, because that's exactly how reputations get destroyed by rumor. What we can responsibly say is this. Iranian authorities have, in multiple waves, used national security framing, sometimes including allegations of foreign links to justify arrests. And those allegations land differently depending on whether you prioritize internal pluralism or external resistance. And that takes us back to Netanyahu and Trump, because from Tehran's perspective, the external threat is not abstract. The June 2025 strikes were real, and they were accompanied by triumphalist rhetoric, claims of obliteration, pressure campaigns, and a political style that treats escalation as branding. The problem with that style, this is where the critique gets sharp, is that it confuses short-term spectacle with long-term strategy. You can damage facilities, yes, but you also teach your adversary what you can do, how you do it, what you rely on, and where you may be overconfident. Defense analysts openly discussed how the results of the GBU-57's employment in Iran would inform future weapon development, meaning even the US sees this as a learning loop. Iran sees the same loop and asks, how do we force our enemy to pay more for every strike? How do we survive the first punch and make the second punch politically unbearable? That's why survivable missile forces, dispersed launchers, and rapid adaptation matter as much as diplomacy. So, when you hear the fear in Washington circles, whether they admit it or not, it's not just Iran might copy something. It's that a sanctions-pressured state can, over time, erode the assumption that Western tech dominance automatically translates into uncontested freedom of action. And if Israel's leadership is relying on hardened sanctuaries and continuity bunkers as psychological insurance while waging expansionist wars and perpetual escalation, the idea that Iran could eventually field more capable penetrators, better seekers, smarter guidance, or simply better operational deception is the kind of uncertainty that changes behavior. This is deterrence by anxiety. You don't need to fire the weapon to force the other side to recalculate. You just need them to believe they can't fully predict the cost anymore. Thank you for watching. Subscribe to support my work. God bless you.